You're Locked On Blue Jackets, your daily podcast on the Columbus Blue Jackets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, Blue Jackets fans, happy Wednesday. Welcome to Locked On Blue Jackets. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am, as always, your host, Jay Foster. Thank you for making us your first listen of the day. Locked On Blue Jackets is free and available on all podcast platforms. If you are a first-time listener or a regular listener, thanks for stopping on by. So today we're going to continue the conversation that I started yesterday with Jack Bushman of Locked On Blackhawks. At some point, presumably, we will play the postponed game, but until then, I thought we would have a chat about how the Blackhawks are doing this season, take a quick look in on Seth Jones before tomorrow. We will probably talk about him in a little bit more detail, so I'm just going to get right into the conversation.
I just think also in the 3 years that he had been there with the style that he brought in, it never really worked. There was never really any progression, especially on the defensive side of things. The Blackhawks finished dead last in high danger chances allowed in all 3 years Jeremy Colleton was there. We never saw any progression on the defensive side of things. And for the offense to be struggling that much after all the moves that they made, for the offense to be struggling that much out of the gate, it really left the Blackhawks in their new front office with no choice, I think, but to, you know, call it quits on Jeremy Colleton before this hole gets even deeper, you know, that they really didn't have an option, I think, because the offense was bad. The defense was bad. There was no fight from this team. They're getting blown out when we know with all the moves that they made, they should have been competitive. So it was just about as frustrating a first month of the season as you could describe. I mean, it took 8 games to grab the lead. The Blackhawks set the longest record in NHL history to open up a season without a lead. Like, this thing just kind of wrote itself, as well as obviously the lawsuit stuff that was going on. It was just a very, very tough time to be covering this Blackhawks team. And there were times where I was like, I don't even want to go to this game. Like, on the ice, it's bad. Off the ice, it's even worse. It was just the first time in my fandom where I was like, this is straight up terrible everywhere. Like, I don't even want to be part of this team. That's how bad it got early on in the season, Jay. Fortunately, things have changed over a little bit under Derek King. But that first month, October, was like, I think I probably had 2 or 3 coffees a day because things just kept going wrong. Like, things just kept going wrong. It was crazy, honestly. But I'm happy to see that this team has finally woken up a little bit once a coaching change had been made.
Yeah, and I do wonder how much of it was, because I think, and this is something I've kind of been thinking about a little bit with the departure of Tortorella, the introduction of Larson, is sometimes team, like, coaches aren't bad coaches, they're just bad for that team. And I wonder how much of that is the Jeremy Colleton, who inherited a tough job, I think. You know, he was coming immediately after Joel Quenneville, which, you know, say what you want about him off the ice, on the ice, you know, whether he was a good coach or not, or whether he just inherited this, you know, masterpiece of a team that they had the Stanley Cup run with, coming after Joel Quenneville was always going to be a disappointment. You know, it's like, okay, this is the... He's like the winningest coach of all time,
right?
Just about. Or I think he was in second place.
He's second. Yeah. He was gonna break it.
Yeah, and then you bring in this kid who, I believe at the time, you still had Brent Seabrook on the team, who was older than Jeremy Colleton. You know, you bring in, he was what, 34 or something, 35, yep, when he took over the team. So he's still, you know, younger than some of the team. And I think it was always going to be a tough job for him to step into Joel Quenneville's shoes. I'd like to see him back in the NHL at some point. I think he does have more to give, but I do think that this was not necessarily the roster makeup that would really benefit from a coach like him,
I 100% agree.
And I also think that he I always hate it when people are like, oh, the coach has lost the room. But I think a lot about him handing the whiteboard over in one of his last games and thinking, ah, okay, he knows they're not going to. And obviously there could have been a benign reason for this. One of the players could have been like, hey, I've got an idea. Can I draw it up? You know, but I do feel it looks like he knows the team isn't going to listen to him. So he's given up a little bit. But it looks like the team is responding really well to Derek King. They kind of, like, what were they, 5-0 in his first five games?
We haven't played hockey in so long, I can't even remember things anymore. Yeah. But they went on a pretty good run there.
Yeah.
But no, I completely agree with everything you just said. And it's funny because literally every time I do a crossover with any other Lockdown host, everyone brings up that whiteboard moment where Jeremy Colleton handed it to the players because everyone's like, I've never seen that before. And you also, I think, brought up a good point that it very well could have been benign as well. Like, even players talked about it after, saying like, you know, that's not maybe the most uncommon thing, whereas, you know, people don't see it a lot, happen a lot on the bench or anything. Obviously it was a little odd, but who knows really what went on there. Was it the player's idea? Was it Colleton's idea? What happened there? No one really knows.
So I'm sure I've seen that happen before, and it wasn't like with other coaches. I can't think, I want to say Patrice Bergeron did it with the Bruins, where, and I'm sure I've seen him drawing up plays and stuff. So it's not like it's the first time that it's ever happened, but I think it was just a combination of the Blackhawks being terrible, Colleton clearly basically out the door, you know, that people have been paying a lot of attention to the Blackhawks. So I think it was just a combination of, oh, let's jump on this and let's make fun of this, because it is kind of funny, you know?
Definitely, definitely. And I also want, yeah, I think you brought up a good point too by saying, you know, this didn't necessarily mean Jeremy Colleton was a bad coach. There was, I mean, Twitter is a beast of its own, as you know, but there was so much Jeremy Colleton slander on Twitter. And it was like, I just honestly never thought he was the right guy for that job. I mean, as you said, coming after Joel Quenneville is pretty big shoes to fill. And this was a guy who had only coached for a couple of years over in Sweden. He didn't have any prior NHL experience. He'd only coached the Rockford IceHogs for one season. I just think he was a little in over his head by being put as the head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks after Joel Quenneville so early into his coaching career. I honestly don't know if Jeremy Colleton really ever had a chance there. And I mean, each season was kind of a new theme for him, right? One year's a rebuild. The next year we put together a pretty good offseason. The year before that, he didn't get a training camp, so we're just kind of going with the flow. It was just never really, I think, the correct situation even for Jeremy Colleton to have success in. Altogether, it was just not a good position for him to be in. And unfortunately, you know, he's the one that's going to go down with the blame for it, especially now.
Coming up in a minute, I've got more of my conversation with Jack, but first I've got to tell you about Built Bar, because it's the new year soon, so that means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit or eating better, like mine probably should be, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan, because Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, or maybe even better than a candy bar. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good, you're going to want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky, waxy, or taste like a chemical spill. You know, I want to eat healthy, but like 2 weeks in, I want chocolate. And here's the great thing about Built Bar, it's covered in 100% real chocolate. Low in calories, low in sugar, low in carbs, high in protein. And here's the best bit. If you go to built.com, use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Once again, that's built.com, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Welcome back to Locked On Blue Jackets. Thank you for making us your first listen of the day. We are free and available on all podcast platforms.
The Blackhawks are responding a little bit better under Derek King. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that Jeremy Colleton was a bad coach. It just means that Derek King's message and his relaxed method is working right now. After the team had such a rough start, you know, Derek King's come in and been a breath of fresh air. He's been very free. He's a former NHL player himself, a veteran who's won in this league and knows what it takes. He's been around players at the AHL level, the NHL level. Now he has a lot of experience of, you know, the mentality around the game of hockey. And immediately when Derek King came in, he talked with the team and said, look, you know, we're just going to go out there. I'm going to let you be a little bit more relaxed. Jeremy Colleton was a little bit more structured and really into his system. And I think that kind of affected the players eventually. And Derek King just kind of let them go out there and do their thing and play to their skill, play to their knowledge, react on the fly. And so far that's been working out for the Blackhawks. Is that something that can work, you know, over the course of a season? And is he the coach for the long term going forward? That I don't know, but it's definitely clear that having a veteran leader who kind of, I think, just knows the NHL game a little bit better has definitely impacted this Blackhawks team. And I'm really hoping that, you know, they'll be able to pick up in some more areas and be able to string together some more wins. The biggest thing with Derek King is we've been competitive night in and night out. We're playing close games. Yeah, we still lose some of those, but we're fighting. We're right there. We're giving ourselves chances to win. Early on in the season under Jeremy Colleton, we're losing 4-1. We're getting blown out. The defense looks atrocious. Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't given a chance to survive in net. His numbers look awful. He's probably kicking himself that he moved his family to Chicago. So it's been a nice turnaround. And I think it all just kind of goes back to Derek King inserting a mindset of relaxation and just playing on your reflexes on the fly rather than having a structure and being so focused on that.
Yeah, sure. I want to talk about Fleury specifically, actually, because I feel like again, he had an awful start to the season. He was allowing 5-6 goals a game. I remember he got pulled against the Penguins after like 8 minutes or something. Like, it was just brutal. And then I remember I caught his stats in one of the more recent games, and he has like a 914 save percentage, which I think just speaks to how good he's been in the last kind of month or so, to go from having a 7.7 something all the way up to a 914 is basically league average. So has Fleury been the difference maker that he needs to be for you, do you think?
There certainly is an argument that Marc-Andre Fleury has been the MVP of this Blackhawks team under Derek King. I think you can honestly go either way with him or Seth Jones, someone we'll talk about a little bit later. But when you get good goaltending in this league, I mean, you have a chance night in and night out. And yeah, early on in the year, I mean, Flower had a goals against average, it's in the fours. He's got a save percentage of like .850. And it's like, oh my God, this poor guy probably looks at his numbers and just wants to throw up.
Because he's thinking he should have retired when he had right. the chance.
Like, he just won the Vezina Trophy last year, and here he is getting lit up like a Christmas tree in the first couple of games of the season. And yeah, that one against Pittsburgh, I really felt bad for him. 8 minutes in, and the Blackhawks defense has given him no help. He gets pulled in his return home, and it's like, come on, you know, like, it was so frustrating, and you just felt for him, you know, that he was clearly frustrated with not only himself. He always expects the world out of himself and thinks he can make every save, but he was clearly frustrated with the performance in front of him as well. And it's kind of interesting to me that whether it be coincidental or not, that ever since Derek King has taken over, Marc-Andre Fleury's really stepped up his game. I believe he's only allowed more than 3 goals once in 12 or 13 starts under Derek King. It's hard to remember now again, because the Blackhawks haven't played in almost 2 full weeks, but he's been incredible. And as I mentioned, when you get that high level goaltending, when you get Vezina caliber goaltending night in and night out, like Fleury's flashed under Derek King so far, that's arguably been the main reason why they've been able to rattle off some more wins here under King than they were under Colleton, because he's been spectacular. And even some games where he loses and the Blackhawks lose the game, he's the main reason why they've been able to be close in those. So I give a lot of credit to Fleury for bouncing back here. And if he keeps playing like that, you know, the Blackhawks may not be out of the playoff picture if, you know, he's able to stay on his A game.
Yeah, I mean, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach, is, you know, or the other way around. Show me a good coach, I'll show you a good goalie, is kind of how it goes, isn't it? So it'll be interesting to see if he can continue that, or if it's kind of just a little flash in the pan. Someone else I want to talk about who is not necessarily a star on the team. I want to talk about Dylan Strome, because we talked about him in the offseason when we were throwing around some trade ideas for Seth Jones. And, you know, obviously Colleton just didn't seem to, like, he'd written him off, I think. and he wasn't getting played. He seems to be getting a little more ice time under Derek King, but is he someone that you think is... Do you see him on the team in the future? Do you see him being traded? What do you think happens with Dylan Strome?
Gosh, it's so tough. I just want to see Dylan Strome be left alone before they make a final decision. Go let him play second line minutes, not for 4 or 5 games, right? Go give him that for the majority of the season. He's not a bottom six player that can play with scrappers and grinders. He needs offensive minded guys around him. He's always been one of those type of players, and it's become more apparent as he's starting to get a little bit older. I want to know what kind of player he is, because I think until we give him that full-time role, we're not really going to be sure, because we've seen flashes. We know he can play with Alex DeBrincat. That first season where he got where he got acquired by Chicago from the Coyotes, he was nearly a point per game player. He was on the top power play unit and thriving there. And under Jeremy Colleton, after that first year, he never really got the same opportunities. If it was, it would be for a game or two. It was never consistent. Under King, Dylan Strome has finally gotten some more offensive opportunities. King has still scratched him once or twice, I believe, which I don't agree with. But if they don't want to use him in a bottom six spot, or if they're going to use him in a bottom six spot, they'd rather scratch him.
In a minute, I've got a little bit more of my conversation with Jack.
That's kind of their mindset with Dylan Strome right now, which I don't know if I necessarily agree with, but I understand where they're going, because if you're going to put him on the fourth line with grinders, he's not going to do well there. So you might as well not even play him. But I just want to see him left alone in that second line spot. Let him play with guys who have the same mindset, who have the same style. And I think that's really what's going to tell us the final answer, whether or not Dylan Strome is a part of this Blackhawks team for the future. There's been trade talks surrounding him for, it seems like, 2 years now. Nothing has happened as of yet, of course, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see him on the move at any point in time. I'm curious to see if the mentality with Strome has changed now that Stan Bowman is out of the picture, as well as Jeremy Colleton. I don't know if Kyle Davidson's going to be as aggressive to move Strome as Stan Bowman was. But it's going to be an interesting situation for sure. I personally would rather just let Strome be on that second line, and then we're going to find out one way or the other if he's part of the future, whether he has success there or whether he struggles. That's kind of, I think, the telltale sign of whether or not he could be a core piece of this Blackhawks team going forward.
Yeah, I know we've kind of joked. I joked a little bit about it in this when the rumors first started going of, oh, hey, it sure would be nice if we could fleece Stan Bowman one more time before he goes, but doesn't appear to be the case. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this new front office does, because I do think, and again, we talked about this a little bit at the start of the season when the Blackhawks were losing a lot, how much of this is because Jeremy Colleton can't coach this team, and how much of it is because he's been given a team that is not very good, you know? And I think there was a lot of parts on this team that should be good. You know, Seth Jones, for all his faults, has had a really strong start to the season. He's, you know, him racking up assists and power play points like nobody's business. I haven't had a look at his underlying stats, but you know, for what you want Seth Jones to do, he's kind of doing exactly what's advertised at the minute. Obviously Fleury, that disastrous start to the season, but he's a really good player. He's only here for a season. You know, you might as well take as much advantage of him as you can get. But and then up front, you've got obviously Kane, DeBrincat, two bona fide stars. Jonathan Toews, who obviously is one of the greatest Blackhawks of all time, but looks like he's still trying to find his way back after missing all of last season. You know, it felt like Stan Bowman had, but like, and beyond those players, I mean, you've got Kirby Dark, who is, by his own account, struggling to find consistency in this league. Beyond that, you don't have a lot that I would consider a key piece. You know, maybe Connor Murphy, maybe Brandon Hagel, or Kubalik. You know, you've got a handful of guys that are kind of that tweener between star and NHL stage. I will be interested to see how this new front office does this offseason when they have player personnel decisions to make for contracts, for trades, things like that. Because I do feel like Colleton was handed a team that was not as well built as I think a lot of people wanted to think.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you bring up because, well, I think this is probably a good way to transition into the Seth Jones and Adam Boqvist discussion that we're going to have because that was one of the final moves that Stan Bowman wound up making as general manager of the Blackhawks. And giving a couple of important higher round picks to Columbus when the prospect pool isn't really all that deep other than 2020 first round pick Lucas Reichel. I don't know if there's another star player in the Blackhawks system at this point. So I think that's another thing that kind of has to be tied into this discussion of, you know, Seth Jones coming to Chicago for Adam Boqvist, a couple firsts and a second. The Blackhawks, it just puts them in a tougher position when you force your own team's hand a little bit, right? You get a player like Seth Jones, you get rid of prospects. That pretty much tells you you're not going in a rebuild direction, right? Getting rid of prospects for a player that's going to attain a lot of money and, you know, isn't 20 years old. Seth Jones isn't old, but he's not, you know, the next face of the franchise up and coming. He's already at that level, you know, so it kind of forced, I think, the Blackhawks hand a little bit and will, I think, going forward as well. And I'm really interested to see how, whether it be Kyle Davidson, who's currently the interim general manager, or if we go and get someone in the future in the offseason or whatnot, whether or not they're going to completely change the mindset and the direction of this organization based on what Stan Bowman has left them with.
And that's about all I've got for you today. Tomorrow, we will take a look at maybe tomorrow's game. As of right now, the Blue Jackets are playing tomorrow night against Nashville. I don't know if that game is going ahead yet. If it is, we'll do a quick preview and we'll also do a little bit more of my conversation with Jack about Seth Jones. So that is on the plans for tomorrow. I have been Jay Foster. You can find me on Twitter at _JacobFoster, JakobFoster. You can find this podcast at LO_BlueJackets. If you have comments, questions, criticisms, you can email me at lockedonbluejackets@gmail.com. And until tomorrow, make sure you stay locked on.